Welcome to Cast of the Past, the time traveling podcast where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom. And Josh, we're here to cover the best games of 2023. Oh, wait, no, we missed that. 2024, am I right?
Yes, 2024, this year. The year that's been ever so great to everybody.
It's back, baby.
We are back. And yes, we are going to be here talking about the best games of this year and the best games of not this year.
As is tradition. So I say we get right into it. Josh, let's go into the past first. What was your favorite game from not 2024?
Number five, Persona 3 Portable. It came to Game Pass about a year and a half ago or so, and it took me a while to actually jump in and start playing it. I loved Persona 4. Persona 5 is a great game as well, but I was like, I got to see where this all kind of like stemmed from, where this all came from, how the generation gaps have projected these games to go. And I was like, you know, Persona 3 Portable, is it a great game? It's not it's the third best Persona game is the best way to put it. It has a great story about, you know, some really dark themes inside of it, but I think overall it's a much more enjoyable, more adult rated game compared to the other two.
Got it. Okay, that's interesting. I figured I was going to see Persona in your conversation. I wonder if I'm going to see it on both lists, but that's really cool. I have not played Portable yet, but I've enjoyed 4 and 5 immensely. I think they're very good games. So it's exciting to hear that Portable holds up. I've always heard that its narrative is damn good. So to hear it on your list.
It is a very mature game. I will give it that. Compared to the other two, to 4 and 5, it is very mature in its themes.
Got it. All right. Well, that's your number 5. I guess I'll give you my cinco. Josh, do you like mall pizza?
Mall pizza is great. I love Dino's. Give me some Dino's.
I don't know by which brand name you know it, but, you know, mall pizza, wherever you get it, it's good because it's mall pizza. It's basically almost all the same recipe. Am I right?
Yeah.
Mafia Definitive Edition is mall pizza.
Interesting. It is
a generic Italians in America becoming gangsters story, but it really scratched the itch for the Grand Theft Auto / Red Dead Redemption narrative driven open world sandbox that I wanted. You know, not many people can copy what Rockstar does. I feel like Hangar 13 probably gets as close as you can get. It's got a really competent combat and shooting system. Its world is really interestingly designed. And, you know, it made me realize open world games nowadays really lack, a lot of them, in my opinion, Mafia made me realize, really lack a nice, definitive series of landmarks. With a few occasions, which are the good ones, you know, Elden Ring, you've always got the Erdtree, or you've got that distinct division in the middle of the map that lets you know which side of the landscape you're on. Breath of the Wild, you got things like the Dueling Peaks or Death Mountain. You know, like, it's an open world game for me needs to have very distinguishable landmarks so I can explore, but still like figure my way out without having to like constantly be jumping into maps and shit. And Mafia did that really well because its city is like a hodgepodge of America. It's New York, but it also has the Golden Gate Bridge and other things. So I can drive around and steal cars and beat people up and still like know, oh, that's what Tony's is. Ah, Mamma Mia. So,
does it scratch the itch? Does it make you want to play the other Mafia games now as well?
Well, I did play Mafia 2. It is not a remake the way Mafia 1 is. It's a straight up HD port of the Xbox 360 game, and it was not fun. Gotcha. I actually completely gave up on it. Mafia 3, however, they apparently remade Mafia 1 with the engine and controls of Mafia 3. So I do have it downloaded, and I'm looking forward to playing it. But if you had a PlayStation Plus account and got it as one of the monthly games, or if you see it on a sale, I could definitely recommend it. It's got a very entertaining, if predictable, story about, you know, gangsters and godfathers, but it's a very decent open world action game that I think you could have a good time.
I was shocked to hear that because I didn't even hear you talk about it at all throughout the year. So it's good that, you know, it makes your list so close to the end of the year as well.
I just want to give a shout out real quick. Thank you, PatNat, for the kind words. And as PatNat said, welcome back, Josh.
Yes. Well, hello.
Thanks for being here. Cowboy, yes, the moon in Majora's Mask is quite a distinguishing feature of that map. But Josh, I believe you are owed a number four.
Yes, number four. So number four takes two things that I really like. Metroidvanias and Dark Souls.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Blasphemous 2. Blasphemous 2 picks up shortly after the DLC of the first game, which was great. It expands on your arsenal of weaponry and stuff like that. And it took pretty much all those things that everyone complained about with the first Blasphemous game and flipped it on its head and said, here, we're going to give you everything that you want at one shot. And it is a beautifully disgusting video game, a great Metroidvania, great platforming abilities to it as well. And the end boss fight is one of those, like, when you finally figure out the pattern, when you finally figure out what you have to do to beat the boss and stuff like that, the puzzle pieces fall aligned and perfectly. And Dark Souls, Metroidvania, what more could you ask for? Blasphemous 2.
Nice. Glad to hear that franchise is continuing to do well. Does it still have that kind of, how do I put it, that modern Sega Genesis look?
Yes.
Okay. Because that's something I always admired about it. You know, they were like, what if Altered Beast? What if insert other Sega game here? You know, that kind of baked lasagna look that Genesis games had.
I always wanted a Castlevania game in the style of Dark Souls, and this is pretty much the closest you can get. So, yeah, Cowboy, I highly recommend Blasphemous 2.
Cowboy mentioning I wanted to play it just for the pixel art GIFs that always show up. Iconic art style and animation style, would you say, Josh?
What was? Yes, pixel art, yeah.
Character animations like that?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yep.
Very cool. Well, I'm
and
glad.
Yes, 21st Century Fool is correct. What more could you ask for? But apparently three more games.
Hey, the more the merrier.
That is true.
Well, speaking of a series that has a lot of other games, my number four is The Legend of Zelda, The Minish Cap, the Game Boy Advance adventure where Link's got a talking hat because he's always got to have a talking something. I thought this may be for me the best 2D Zelda that's ever been made. And I'll tell you a big reason why, because you'll appreciate it. It's got a dodge roll. So it's
basically, oh my God,
it's basically a Souls game.
Oh my God.
But it made combat really fun because you're not just like scurrying around in one of the D-pad directions. You can also dodge roll out of the way. And thus bosses and enemy encounters are really fun. But they use the whole, you know, the gimmick of the game, right? Link can grow really tiny.
Yep.
And then visit the village of the Picori, the tiny inhabitants of Hyrule. They use the fact that you can have Ant-Man abilities, basically, to split Hyrule in an intriguing new way. You know, we're always splitting Hyrule into light and dark or upside down and right side up. But here it's like, no, there's just one Hyrule, but you got to see every perspective on it. And it's set like way, way back in the Zelda lore. So Ganon's not around. We have a new villain named Vati, who's a wizard. And overall, I had a lot of fun. It's a good adventure with a lot of exploring. And I honestly think that it kind of proves that the cel-shaded Wind Waker style might be the most endearing look Zelda has ever had as a franchise, because even in a 2D pixelated look, it still looks super great. Like, that is people made fun of it when that game was first revealed all the way back in the day, back when we were young, but it's held up incredibly well. So if you have Nintendo Switch Online, or if you got one of them ROM hacks, cause you're a real gamer, check it out. It's really worth it.
No, Minish Cap is one of the Zelda games that I always I never really touched because it was on the GBA and I didn't really have a Game Boy Advance growing up. I had the Color. And then I went right to, probably right to the DS after that. I kind of skipped that generation. So Minish Cap, that might be worth a play.
I know that you love the 2D Zeldas most of all. So like I said, it's got a Souls dodge roll. So I think you might be able to give it a little bit longer than just a passing glance.
Speaking of soul dodge rolls.
Oh boy.
Number three, Lies of P.
Oh.
Pinocchio meets Dark Souls. And it is just a wonderful Souls-like game. It makes one of my least favorite game mechanics fun. and that is weapon durability.
Interesting. It, okay.
You actually, like, as you're playing through and stuff like that, your weapons start to degrade over time because you're, you know, using it to destroy machines and metal and stuff like that. So you have to use part of your arm to sharpen your blade as you're going through. But different abilities, you can make them flame or electricity or anything like that. So, like, you have that on the go for you. Boss designs are amazing. The fact of the whole world of Pinocchio pretty much being capsulized into this horror franchise is just, oh, it's so good.
I've had a lot of Pinocchio the past few years. We've had Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, but from everything I've heard, including you just now, Liza P may be the definitive experience. The game has to be good because we all know it birthed Lies of J in Bad Elephant Wrestling.
Overall, though, like, it is one of those games that it's so well polished and it was done so well that it gave, like, the FromSoft team, like, a run for their money with what you can do now with a franchise. And it just brings a breath of fresh air to already great and stable genre of games.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, From Software does it best, but they shouldn't be allowed to just run the table. It's always good when you have a disruptor in the scene. Do you think we're going to get Lies of P2?
The end of the game, if they're going to go with the Lies of, it should be D. Because if you've beaten the end of the game, there's a really nice setup for what the next game's going to be.
Okay.
Or O. D or O, I would say.
Well, if it was O, it'll be a prequel to Lies of P. 21st Century Fool in the chat jumping back to Minish Cap saying, you beat the game by expanding in Vati's butt. Ant-Man would be proud. I hope Ant-Man would be proud of my number three because it is the CRPG Disco Elysium.
Oh, you finally played some Disco Elysium.
I did. I embraced the darkness as a drunken
detective.
I'm a detective.
Poor use of a detective.
What I would say is this man is one of the biggest scumbums in gaming history. And yet the adventure that you can go on with your absolutely beloved sidekick, Detective Kutaragi, is incredibly deep, incredibly interesting. Just the lore alone. Like, this is one of the most dense and interesting in-game universes I have ever encountered, where I wanted to talk to every NPC I could to learn things and to see how far I could push things, because it's an RPG with no combat. Everything that you earn or everything you do is based off of conversation and discoverability. And there's a lot of freedom.
Roll the dice.
Yeah, there's a lot of freedom within it. The only thing I'm going to say against it, and I still want anyone who hasn't to play it, I'm just going to say I have to be honest here. It has one of the most dog shit third act reveals in any story, in any medium I have ever encountered. It didn't change the fact that it's probably one of the best things I've ever experienced in my life. That's how good it is.
That's saying a lot.
I am the resident Switch defender, I think, of the two of us. I have to say this. I played it on the Switch. It is not optimized for the Switch. So please play it on a much more powerful machine, but please play it, because it is storytelling and kind of creative game innovation or motivation pushed to a good degree. Really recommend Disco Elysium. Thanks. The final cut.
Yes. No, I've played some Disco Elysium and stuff like that. I've enjoyed what I've played of it, and I do need to go in and finish the game. Mm-hmm. I think I made it to the beginning of the arc of the second act of the game. But I have to go back and replay it from the beginning. I already have it downloaded on my PC. I just need to boot it up and play it.
Okay.
But yeah,
okay. We'll do it.
Well,
after this though,
hold on tight. Or should I say, hold on to your L2 and R2 buttons, because it's a rocky road ahead of us. Number two, Death Stranding. Death Stranding is the surprise game of the past year and a half of me playing it, because I didn't think I was going to enjoy this game. And within the first opening hour of this game, it hooked me on. I was just like, I can't believe I'm playing this. I can't believe I'm going to enjoy this game the way that I am. And yes, it is just traveling delivery man back and forth the entire time. But the story is so well done. And Higgs is probably one of the best bad guys in all of video games. But Death Stranding 2 is a highly anticipated game now coming up because of this. And I'm just so excited because I just was so shocked with how good Death Stranding 1 was.
Good, good. I'm not saying anything else. Good job. Okay, I'm moving on to my number two. Sorry. I'm moving on to my number two, which is a game that you bugged me forever to play, and then I played it, and 80 hours later, I could say that Persona 5 Royal is a cool-ass video game, Josh. From its loading screens to its menus, it's super fucking good. An incredibly inventive concept. I'm ripping off a line from Donkey here, but it's Inception meets Pokemon meets like Ocean's 11. You know what I mean? A great cast of characters, as with the other Persona games that I've enjoyed and the other Atlas games that I've enjoyed, and just, you know, effortlessly addicting. You know, I'm not going to put 80 plus hours into a game unless I'm really invested in seeing where this shit's gonna go. And Persona 5 takes you there. A lot of stuff to do, whether you are catching personas to add to your arsenal, whether you are exploring mementos, the giant procedurally generated kind of dungeon area for you to grind, or grinding out personal relationships so that you can buff the stats of your party, freaking going to see movies, playing video games
inside of video games.
It's crazy. And of course, to top it all off, it's scored by just an incredible soundtrack. What a game. What a game. Yeah. You got to play it. The hype is real, ladies and gentlemen. The hype is real.
The hype is real. Which brings me to my number one of not this year, a game that I put in over 370 hours into, Persona 5 Royal.
Hey!
What more can we talk about? I mean, this is, like I said, the most stylish game ever. The soundtrack blows Persona 3 out of the water. It rivals Persona 4 in soundtrack wise, but overall the game is just so fun. It's so exciting. The dungeons are so great and so vast and so artistic. It is the most artistically awesome game. I can't get over the art style for it. And the fact that they're gonna make a Persona 6, where else can you go? How much better can you get?
It's got that artistic aura, that aesthetic amazingness. Yeah.
It knows what it is, and it does it. And like one thing we've talked about you know, off camera and stuff is the load screens are fun. Like the fact that you have load screens and they don't bother you. They don't weigh you down. You're not like, oh, here we go again. No,
it should be impossible for that to happen.
But yeah, you know, it's just Persona 5 Royal. If you haven't played it, definitely pick it up and play it. Play through the first dungeon and let me know what you think of it. Because like the first dungeon is probably one of the best dungeons, and it should set you forth for what the rest of the game's going to be.
Yes, yes. Well, what else can I say except that my number one is Death Stranding. We switched. We had inverted.
Yeah, do it one and two.
Oh my god, Death Stranding is such an experience. I have to just elaborate on everything Josh said because he's right. Nothing he said was wrong. Here is a tale about how the more we get invested in technology that makes it convenient for us to separate ourselves, the worse off we are as a species, because we're not creating, we're not connecting, we're not motivated, we're not innovating. And the only people who can save us, the only people who can save us from ourselves are Amazon delivery drivers. And let me tell you, I had sweaty palms from intense experiences. I had a wet face from crying because sometimes this game just pushes you to the emotional edge. It is chock full of Hideo Kojima's weirdness. This is the weirdest man who ever lived. But you know what?
God damn, can he make a game?
He makes shit that is unparalleled in almost any medium. And you can always see the sincerity and the truth of what he's trying to do under his fucking goofiness. Like, okay, we're seeing trailers for Death Stranding 2, and there's a doll dancing like a K-pop boy band or whatever. I can't wait to find out what that means about my relationship with my father. I can't wait, because I'm sure it's something like that, you know?
I just watching the trailers of Death Stranding 2 just gets me so hyped now because of just seeing and realizing what I'm actually watching, because I saw the trailers before I played the game. And now after I beat the game, I went back and watched the trailers and I'm like, oh my God, it makes sense now. It all makes sense. And I have so many more questions.
Yeah. Yeah. But you mentioned Higgs. It's the rest of the cast of this game. Mama, Die Hard Man, Dead Man, of course, Sam Porter Bridges, Fragile. This is an incredible.
She's fragile.
But not that fragile. Hartman. Hartman had got me watching like in real life Charlie Chaplin movies because he recommended one in the game and it fits into the time span in which he's alive. This game's incredible. And I just want to mention, I know you made kind of a deprecating joke about the gameplay. Yes, it is. It is traversal. It's a traversal based game. But what I really like about it is that the traversal actually means something because of the way the game opens up, the more efficiently you explore its map, to the point where like you can make the game more accessible for other people in like other players like you and me in real life. If you play the game, you know what I mean? Like you're actually making things good for other people. And that's incredible. Cause that like, it's a game that actually ties into its own themes of helping and each other, connecting. Go ahead, please.
You can make the game as difficult for yourself as you want it to be too, by doing those options, like by building roads or playing down ladders and stuff like that. Like you can make the game as easy or as hard as you possibly want it to be.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible. Like really, Kojima killed it. And I'm not just saying that as a fanboy. He literally killed it. He killed all of humanity with his time rain that ages them up. Hello. Jake in the chat, good to see you. You
Hello.
Are coming in just at the end of our best games from not this year, but we hope you stick around. What a year previous years were.
Good years.
Yes. But what about this one?
Oh, this one, 2024, the year that I played the most games of from this year.
You think you set a record? Like the most current games ever?
I would say I'm really close. Okay. I just downloaded Path of Exile 2. Oh, yeah. So that's another game from this year.
But you're not allowed to like it, because if you like it, this video becomes extinct.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So hate it. Make sure you hate it.
But I'm going to let you go first with your number five, Tom,
from
games of 2024.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That also makes sense. All right. The fifth best game of 2024 is Celeste 64, a free-to-play 3D platformer from Maddie Makes Games and the team behind Celeste. This is the closest I think any developer has ever gotten to the precision and feel of the golden era of 3D platformers. It is free. I already mentioned that. You can get it on itch.io. It's short. It's long enough to be enjoyable, but not too long that you just want to like just give up. And it's so challenging. It offers so much skill refinement, and it's packed with so many cute little secrets and Easter eggs tied to the larger Celeste game. And it's just an incredible experience. I'm so impressed with what they were able to pull off, and it's going to lead into future Celeste titles. There are drips and drabs of where this game's going to go. So it's a canon sequel, and you got to play this. Literally, it costs nothing. It's an incredible experience. Celeste 64, Fragments of the Mountain. Play it. Damn it. It's so good.
It's an N64 style game that I actually enjoy. That right there is enough
proof positive. It should be number one under that logic, but
I think it was fantastic. I think it was a shock to everyone when it came out. It just kind of shadow dropped one day, but man, whew, what a game.
My favorite moment in playing Celeste 64 for the first time is I was trying to climb up that one really tall tower in the center where there's like spikes on all four sides. And I thought I had to do it through this complex wall kick strategy. And I spent like an hour of in real life time mastering it because I was like, I gotta do it. And I did it. And then I immediately like watched the speedrunner and realized I had missed an entire like more easily climbable section. But I wasn't pissed. I was impressed they're not like it, because just like those games I was talking about, like Mario 64, you know, they're like, there's your objective. How are you going to get to it? You figure it out. And I always love when a game does that. So Celeste 64, my number five game for 2024. Josh, where does your list begin?
My number five is going to be the first shocker of the list. Number five, Metaphor ReFantazo.
At five.
At five. Yes. Okay. The only reason it's ranked so low is because I haven't finished it yet. I enjoy the game from what I've been playing of it. The world is a little hard to get into. I feel like some of the story pieces are a little too complex for what I'm used to from the Persona team. That doesn't mean that I'm not enjoying the combat. It doesn't mean that I'm not enjoying the soundtrack. It doesn't mean that I'm not enjoying the game itself and my time being in it. It's just one of those games that it took... I stepped away from it for a little bit too long. And that's hindering a little bit of my time with it. But I still think it is pushing games to the future. Doing things that we should be looking at for games that are the best games of this year. The proof is in the pudding, and they have the right thing here. They just got to stick the landing. And I'm hoping once I play another 70 hours of this game that it sticks the landing for me.
On the count of three, do we want to sing our favorite song from Metaphor?
No, I don't think that's culturally.
Oh, no, we're going to do it. Ready? 3, 2, 1. The battle theme. It's so good.
It's so good. It is so good and so badass. But yeah, Metaphor ReFantazio, number 5 on my list. That means that there's been 4 other games that have been more impressive to me.
I'm shook because now I don't know where your list is going to go. I've known you long enough to be like, I know where he's gonna put this, but this is 5. I'm rattled, and I was also rattled. Hello, Metroid Mike. It's beautiful to see you. Thank you for scaring the bejesus out of me with the Stone Cold Steve Austin theme. You're a stinker. You're a little stinker, but it's good to see you in the chat. And 21st Century Fool confirming we are canceled for singing the battle theme from Metaphor ReFantazio. All right, moving on to my number 4. Can we take our hats off for just 1 second? And can we give it up for freedom? Everybody, who loves freedom in this chat? I want to hear some freedom. Liberty, 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 liberty. I'm talking about Helldivers 2, the most free game that costs $40 ever. I'm putting my hat back on. Hang on. Helldivers 2, the sensation that even Sony and Arrowverse were like, or Arrowhead, whatever the developer was called. Sorry to disrespect you while I'm praising you. But the game that they were like, oh, this is going to be this popular? Yes, it was that popular. And let me tell you, if you know anything about me, I love third-person shooters. I love objective-based control modes. I love killing bugs. And this game does all that and way more. It's some of the most fun multiplayer shenanigans I think I've likely had since the first Overwatch. The spirit of the game is really fun. The tone, it's really great. I have just had a lot of fun dicking around on those maps with friends. And I'm not going to get too much into the quality of the community support, wherever it has gone, wherever it's going to continue to go. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make this about the controversy of modern day live service gaming. All I want to say is that the spirit of the game is something that I really, really loved. And I have put a lot of fun ass hours into securing democracy across the galaxy. And that's why I'm going to say Helldivers 2 is my number 4. Josh,
Have you ever watched the Starship Troopers movie?
You know, it's one of my great sins that I've never been directly confronted with whether or not I've watched it. But I know enough about it to, like, you know, dodge the question. But you're asking me straight. No, I've never seen it. But I want to.
Yeah, you definitely need to watch it because I think you will enjoy it more now playing this game. Sure. You'll just appreciate it more. This is a multiplayer game that I put 40 plus hours into. And that's saying something for a game.
Should be your number 1 under that logic.
No, because we know that I'm not a multiplayer person. I'm not into battle pass stuff. I'm not into all that kind of whatnot. But the time that I spent with this game, it was fun. It was exciting. It was different. It was new. It was a breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. And a different way to go about multiplayer games and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying, and that's just a testament to it. It got you. It got a multiplayer non-believer out there stepping on bugs and killing bots, and that's special. That's got to be something special in a video game. I just want to shout out 21st Century Fool mentioning, if you haven't played against the Illuminati yet in Helldivers 2, it gets even better. I have not actually gotten to experience the new mode. A lot of end-of-year games I've been catching up on, but that just leaves me more excited to go back to Helldivers. So thank you for that recommendation. Josh, what's next? What's coming next?
Well, if number 5 shocked you, number 4 is going to shock you even more.
Let's go.
Elden Ring Shadow of the Erdtree.
All right, Jeff Keighley, bring a DLC in here. No, I'll allow
DLC
it.
That's 40, 50 hours long? Yes. It's the fact that it's a brand new game, a whole new map, a whole new section of the game to go through. Over 40 different enemies, over, I think, 20 different bosses inside the game. Yes. This is a brand new game on top of, it's called an expansion pack.
All right, PC nerd. Look at this. But please keep going.
It's the only reason it's a little bit lower on my list is because I still haven't finished the final boss yet. And part of me is like one of those, like, I don't want to beat the final boss because then it's over officially, but like I can do it. I already have gotten good. I've already maxed out what I need to do to get to where I need to be. But I just don't want to pull the trigger to finish it because I don't want to end it. I don't want Elden Ring to be over, even though we're getting a new Elden Ring next year. I don't want it to be over. But I think Shadow of the Erdtree is just it's bigger and better than people expected it to be. What FromSoft does with their games, and when you see your map and you're like, okay, the map is this big, but you don't realize that the map goes up and down. Like, there's the verticality to the map itself. You know, when you go into a dungeon and you're realizing that you're going hundreds and hundreds of feet below the ground again, like what they did for this is, this could have been a standalone game, and I think people wouldn't have batted an eye at it. You know, it came out, it was what, $30, $40 when it came out, and people were like, okay, I'm fine spending that much for a DLC pack.
Sure.
But no, Shadow of the Erdtree, oh, so good. But number 4.
All right. Well, I'm happy to hear that you, as my foremost Elden Ring fan in my life, are really loving it. And, you know, I still actually do believe that I have a problem with DLCs being in the Game Awards Game of the Year. But the fact that it's as impressive as it is, that's really admirable. It goes to show that From Software, even though they don't always make games that I 100% love, I admire how hard they're flexing with their commitment to putting out quality. Miyazaki's an evil man, but that doesn't mean that he makes bad video games. So I gotta tip my hat and just say, I'm happy for you. I'm happy that you got a lot of experience out of that. And just think, when you do beat that final boss, Horalu is going to go down in like 5 seconds with all that extra EXP you grinded out.
So, I know.
Mean, you should just go fuck Hulk Hogan up right now. You know what I mean?
Number 3, Tom.
Number 3 would technically be the third entry in its franchise, narrative-wise, that would be Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, the late-emerging narrative game from Machine Works and Bethesda, with Troy Baker basically being the doppelganger of Harrison Ford. And I gotta say, this was such a relief in a way. Like, when they announced this, I was super pessimistic, because video game tie-ins to movies have not been good in a while, and even when they were good, they weren't great. But this one, I really got to admit that
they picked the perfect team to make this game.
And it's a balancing act of tone and presentation and gameplay. It knows exactly what is best about Indiana Jones. You are always an underdog. Like, this is not like a run and gun macho shooter. Like, Indy can go down super fast because he's just a regular dude. But he's a regular dude who loves going on adventures, finding cool shit, and punching Nazis. And that's always been the appeal of the good movies in the franchise. You know what I mean? Like, Indiana Jones is always a gateway to cinematic thrills. And that's what they do with this. It's super easy to just stumble across a cool collectible on the map. It's super easy to like walk into a situation where it's like, well, I can knock that guy out from behind, or I could pick up this a frying pan and whack him in the head with it, or I can get into fisticuffs with the coolest punching noise in movie history. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's got enough of the, what do they call it? The immersive sim elements that you can get experimental with how you want to engage with combat or stealth, that, you know, it's super fun and engaging. And the story, while at some points it is a little bit of like familiar indie stock, you know, like you go to Egypt to a dig site. Where's that from? Raiders of the Lost Ark. You go to Italy to investigate a Christian a mystery. Where's that from? Last Crusade. But I mean, it's not one to one, but yeah, you could tell them, you could tell that it's Machine Games playing it a little safe with what we want out of an indie game, because they don't want to get into aliens or, you know, anything like that. So
I don't
personally fully fault them for it, but I am going to admit that it exists. And I'm just going to say that, you know, I'm having a blast with it. And this is my game that I'm going to admit that I have not finished yet, but
okay.
Short of this having a dog shit ending, this has just been a very fun experience. And I think Xbox were super foolish to promise that this was coming to PlayStation in a couple months, because this is like one of those console defining experiences that I'd be like, I think anybody be proud to have this in their library and kind of keep it to themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very worth playing.
I know I don't have Game Pass right now, but in a couple months when Avowed comes out, I said I'm going to pick up Game Pass again to play Avowed for next year. So that's probably when I'll play indie, but yeah, I've heard nothing but great things about it.
And the thing is, I think a lot of, I'm not, this is going to sound like a backhanded compliment, but I mean it in the best way. I think a lot of the praise has just come from the fact that people's expectations were kind of low. People mm-hmm. don't have good opinions about licensed games anymore.
One thing I loved about it, did you see the collector's edition of the game?
Does it come with outfits, right?
No, the big collector's edition of the game came with a life-size globe that you had a magnetic airplane that you could put on it and travel it across the globe.
Now I want to spend money on that. Damn it, Josh, why did you tell me that? But yeah, I mean, we saw Crystal Skull in theaters together. I know how much mm-hmm. you appreciate indie as a franchise. Like I said, it's what I said. It's the indie movies are about just the excitement of adventure. And that's what this game gets me. You know what I mean? Like it's good because it knows the tone it should aim for. So that's my number three. Nice. Josh, do you have a licensed game at your number three?
I don't. I have a game that already surfaced already on my list. Persona 3 Reload. Persona 3 Reload. It is a modern day, you know, remake of Persona 3 Portable. So everything you've come to love about Persona 3, it is more modern and it is in the same engine as Persona 5. So it is stylistic. It is awesome. The soundtrack is bops of brand new songs to it. You can play the Persona 5 theme and songs inside the game if you want to. There's just so much you have, so much more customization, new things that they've added in the games. They added these, like, they're called, like, I think they're called Showtime events, which is very similar to like your special attacks with like the big cinematic attacks and stuff like that from Persona 5.
The team ups, right?
Yep. They added them to Persona 3. They also added the ability to do baton passing inside the game as well now too. Just adds so much more customization to what the game is. And the DLC just came out back in September, which added Joker as a playable villain in the game. So there's so much just to this game. If you like Persona 3, you were going to definitely love Persona 3 Reload.
This is a cast of the past history, I have to add. This is the first time that a game and its remake have ever appeared mm-hmm. in the two concurrent best of lists. So good job, Josh. You just made history.
Yeah. I did a job.
That's interesting. I really, what I'm saying that's interesting for is because it's Joker is a villain in the DLC.
Yeah.
Is this Persona Q? Is this one of those DS games where the casts cross over? I really want to know what's up with that. So now, God damn it, I'm going to give my life 100 hours of my life to a game.
But if you got Game Pass, it's on Game Pass and they gave you the DLC for free with Game Pass.
Josh, is it the best deal in gaming?
It is the best deal in gaming.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, I'm super glad that Persona 3 was a game so nice you played it twice. And I definitely will let you know when I get to it. But I don't think I'm going to be able to get to it anytime soon because, Josh, I'm still playing my number two game, Balatro. Listen, Balatro, I'm going to say it, is a perfect object. I think it is in the realm of Tetris, the first Super Mario Brothers, Portal, where it is a video game that's just lightning in a bottle. It nails presentation, mechanics, skill refinement, and it brings it all together into this endlessly replayable experience where I could put it down for hours and come back and be still jazzed about it, or weeks, as I did. I took a long break from Balatro, but as soon as I picked it back up, I was like, oh, I'm good to go again, you know, because it works the roguelike elements so well into something that's so common, just poker. You know, you and I used to have poker nights when we were in high school together, and the music is so intoxicating, and just even the UI elements, looking for the really cool art style on the Jokers and all the fun abilities they have. It is just once in a generation that a game like this comes out. And the fact that it was designed by one person, everything about it, one person, Local Thunk.
Nobody knows what it looks like.
You are a maestro. You are a maestro, Local Thunk. I got to give it to you. This is something special. So Balatro, that's my number two game of the year.
Balatro is a super fun game. It's not strangely addicting, but it is addicting to the, I just want to see the flames appear behind my numbers. That's all I want.
So satisfying. And I'm going to offer a qualifier. I did this actually in 2020. I had a distinction on my top two. Balatro is the best game of 2024. It is the, in my opinion, representation of the art form of this year. But it wasn't my favorite game of this year. So I'm just going to throw that out.
Gotcha.
There. Josh, how about your number two? Can you drop it?
Number two. Yeah, number two is a game. This is a little weird for me, but this is a game where I don't care about the story. Mm-hmm. I care about the action. I care about the gunplay. I care about the combat. I care about the soundtrack, all this stuff. Number two, Stellar Blade. It is a great hack and slash game. It has the battle mechanics that I wish Final Fantasy 16 had, because it is just so fun. It's easy to pick up and play and understand how to do, but difficult to master when you get into certain boss fights and stuff like that. It has an amazing dodge mechanic, has a great parry mechanic inside the game as well. And dodging, parrying, what more do you need inside of a action hack and slash game? But it is a great RPG overall. The story is not the best, and that's why it's number two on my list and not number one, because if the story did stick the landing towards the end, I think it would have been one of those games that I would be talking about much more. But overall, I had so much fun playing this game. I put 50, 60 hours into this game already. I've done multiple playthroughs of it. I've just enjoyed my time with this game so much, but it is not the best game this year.
All right, Josh, he wants those big booty cheeks a clapping when he's playing his action games. Platinum, right? This is a platinum release.
It's not a platinum. Oh, no, I forget who made it, but it's their first game that they ever did, but Sony published it. So it's technically an exclusive Sony game. That is one of those things. You can definitely tell that the censorship to the game, they were like, we don't care about censorship. We're going to have jiggle effects and everything. I showed you a screenshot from the train sequence a while ago. And
yeah, you sent it to my work email, and then I got fired for NSFW content.
You would think it was Platinum or Suda 51, but no, no.
Well, I know that was a super hype release at the beginning of the year, and I remember how much time you're putting into it, so I'm not surprised to see where it ended up here. But that's an intriguing number two. I guess I have to just do it. My number one game of 2024 is A Metaphor Re Fantasio. What's the matter, you? You want to be the king? You want to hang out with Stroll?
Nobody wants to hang out with Stroll.
Yeah, everyone wants to hang out with Stroll. Atlas made something really, really special here in that how do I put it? I love the Persona games, as we've already mentioned and geeked out a lot on this list, but I really liked that they could take the bones of what makes Persona work so well and reconfigure it, remix it into something this unique and fresh that doesn't feel out of place. You know what I mean? Like this, this is a brand new IP from a legendary studio that has such a unique world with really interesting in-depth fantasy lore, really interesting characters that are well-written. And its combat system, while playing in some of the kind of facets that Persona is familiar with, it's still doing enough cool stuff that I'm just like, wow, like this needs to go on as its own series. You know what I mean? I really like just the archetype system where, you know, what's cool about Persona is you always want to fill your party out with the right members who have supporting personas that match the best battle situation. But here, any character can be equipped with any archetype as long as you grind out and, you know, allocate experience points and buff them up, you know, do the work. But that just makes battle combination possibilities so much more tantalizing. And I already mentioned how in love I am with the world. I think the central concept is a really unique thing to center the social system around, because it was always great in Persona when you were helping people, you know, because it's usually tied to like a nice subquest or something, or, you know, it just felt good to be helpful. But here you're competing to be the king of this kingdom, of this, you know, world. And you're only going to do it if you have the trust of the people behind you. So you're not just being an RPG hero. You've got to be some kind of hero if you want support. It's really tough for me to like a JRPG. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I think they suck or anything. It's just,
No.
When it's big time sinks, I need big motivation and big investment. This game did it for me. Yeah.
I agree with you. Like I said, it made my list. It's a little bit lower just because I didn't put as many hours into it as I would like to.
Sure.
But it has the juice.
Also, you'd think that the Persona series had mined every iconic monster design that we would ever see from Atlas. The little teeth dudes who just walking around chilling. It's like, I'm a turf. I want one of those. I want a stuffed tooth. That's all I'm saying. I want one of them boys. I want one of them boys. Some of the humans are truly nightmare fuel stuff.
When we say humans, we don't mean actual humans. We mean humans as in the monsters of the game. Yes. They're called humans.
Yes. And if you find out why, it's pretty great. Again, the whole thing is just so well conceived. Really loved it. But that's enough about my gushing of my one, your five. I need to know what your one is, Josh.
Number one is a game that I own on several different consoles right now. It is a game that I just constantly keep picking up to play over and over again because it is just so fun and so addicting, and the gameplay style is just something that has been unheard of. It's so good that it should be illegal. Number one is Balatro.
Hey! Bang, 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 bang!
It's a game that is so fun that it should be illegal.
Did you get it on your phone?
Yeah, I got it on my phone.
Oh, you're done. You're done.
I got it on my phone. I got it on my Steam Deck. I got it on my PlayStation 5. What? I didn't want to talk about it that much because you already hit on a lot of things, about what, you know, how great the game is, made by one person. Soundtrack is fantastic. Just the replayability to the game is just bar none. But come on, like it is. Whew.
What is your favorite Friends of Jimbo expansion so far?
Oh, I haven't really jumped into those.
Oh, well, it's just in the options menu. You just select which game you want to apply.
I'm trying to beat the main base game still. Like, I beat it one time, but I want to get more. I'm trying to platinum it.
Okay. All right. Well, I know that there are several franchises in there that you love. So I'm kind of like.
Yeah, I know. Dave the Diver is one of them, right? Dread. Shovel Knight. Oh, Shovel Knight is in it?
Yep. Shovel Knight just joined. Yeah. Cyberpunk, The Witcher, Slay the Spire, a lot of Friends of Jimbo getting added. Cowboy in the chat saying, to be honest, game feel carries the game too. Can you elaborate on that? You talk about haptic feedback because
music, noise, animation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I said, just the ability to see the flames behind your numbers as they appear. That's just one of the most satisfying visuals in recent gaming.
I asked about phone. I've played the majority of every playthrough I've done on it on my phone, and the way that they have programmed my phone's vibrations like all around the back to perfectly kind of haptic feedback to things I do, I'm so impressed.
Yeah. No, and you brought it up when you were talking about it. It is a perfect game. It is up there in the ranks of Tetris, I think. You know, it is, how can we make poker fun and addicting and not cost money? Like, like physical money. Yeah. Like, you don't need to go to a casino to play this.
Well, that's what I love about Local Funk too. Just going to keep praising this man or woman. I don't know who Local Funk is, but they have publicly stated, they put in their will that Bellatro can never be monetized, because they were like, oh shit, if casinos get their hands on this. So Godspeed, Local Funk.
No, Bellatro is I think the biggest shock of this year.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
What do you want to do from five? Do you want to do your resummarize your top five?
Yeah. So my top five was Metaphor ReFantazio, number four, Shadow of the Erd Tree, number three, Persona 3 Reload, number two, Stellar Blade, and number one, Bellatro.
Oh, what a year.
What a year. Yes. But what about next year, Tom?
Would you want to make some predictions?
I got a pretty big one.
Okay. What do you predict will happen in the world of games in 2025?
Grand Theft Auto 6 is not coming out next year.
It's not
coming out next year.
Now, you don't mean this in kayfabe, like, oh, God of War's not coming out. You actually think this...
I actually mean it's not coming out next year. It's going to be a 2026 game.
Interesting. Do you have anything that you're reading in the tea leaves, or just basically?
No, I just know the scale of this game and how big it's going to be and what they're going to be trying to pull off. And they're going to be looking at all these games that have come out. You know, they're going to be looking at Baldur's Gate 3. They're going to be looking at Metaphor. They're going to be looking at Elden Ring. They're going to be looking at all these huge titles that have released over the years. And they have to make a game that's going to give everybody what they want, plus be brand new, something a breath of fresh air for people. And there's no way that they can pull it off in less than a year.
Yeah. I can see your point. Yeah. I can also see your prediction as a possibility based off two things. Red Dead Redemption 2 faced a couple significant delays before it finally came out. And that was, for its time, a ginormous game. So it could happen. And the second thing, maybe I'm misreading something, but the fact that 2K is putting out Mafia: The Old Country, I think less than 3 months before the stated release date of 6, maybe people think that's enough time, but I think it's a little curious that a big publisher like this is going to put two similar games that close to each other, because you risk cannibalization. So,
well, maybe. You also have Borderlands 4.
True. Maybe Mafia and Borderlands are kind of meant to buttress a delay of GTA 6.
Yeah, but I don't think GTA 6 is coming out anytime soon. That game is going to be 2026, if not 2027.
I like that. Metroid Mike saying they put Bellatro as a mini game in GTA 6. That's why it's going to get delayed, because they have to figure out the mechanics.
Well, you had a cell phone in 5, so you might as well. Yeah. An upgraded cell phone that has Bellatro inside of it.
I'm not going to be surprised if whenever 6 comes out, it has they've kind of already confirmed it will have an in-game cell phone, but if it's going to have its own games within it, and I want to see what the gaming culture around that's going to be. So we'll see about that. My big prediction for 2025 is that we will see $80 retail games before the end of the year. And I don't mean to get political, but I'm just going to say what I'm going to say. Given what some of the announced plans are for the upcoming America presidential administration, if certain tariffs get enacted, game publishers who operate overseas are going to pass the pricing on to us. And I think it is likely that $70 might become $80. I don't want it to happen, but I don't know. I didn't want 70 to happen, and it became the norm quicker than I thought it would. So, I think we could be seeing some $80 retail games.
I can see it. I can see that happen. Yeah, with how big games are getting to be and how much time is getting put into them and stuff like that. I don't think the games that you see announced right now, like I know like GTA 6, I can see that in an $80 game.
Yeah, and they'd be justified. I people would pay for that.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain games out there right now that I would pay $80 for. You know what I mean? Like Baldur's Gate 3, how big that game is and stuff like that. That's worth $70, $80. Elden Ring, it's worth the $100 and some that I put into the game already.
Sure. We can make the classic investment versus price argument that you and I have talked about in real life. And it's always interesting. Yeah. But Yeah.
No, but for the new norm, mm-hmm. I can see that. Yeah. Yep.
We did have a... go ahead.
No, I can see it's starting with games like Madden, though. The games that are the most popularized, you know what I mean? Like Madden and wrestling will get infected by that as well, too. But like, I can see all of your sports games getting hit with that tax.
We had a prediction from good old RK Slevin, who said, next year, Slay the Spire 2, Hades 2, and Fable are all going to be a thing. I'm so giddy, I want someone to hit me across the head and put me in a coma until those games come out. I feel you, RK. The wait for good Fable has been far too long. And the little bit of Hades that I have been able to play, thanks to your generosity, RK, I'm very excited for the full game experience to be complete.
Hades 2 is. I'm not going to play it until it gets officially released. I don't want to play the early access and stuff like that because I know that they're sprinkling stuff in every couple months. I want to play the game in as its entirety when it comes out.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So that's why I'm waiting for that. But Slay the Spire, I dabbled in the first one. The second one looks a little fun. I'm not a big fan of the art style. They changed up some of the art to the game, and it just looks a little off-putting to me. It looks a little too cartoonish now.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that the gameplay is not going to be great.
I got an extra one, Josh, if you want to hear mine.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, go ahead.
Silk Song will be canceled. It is never coming out. It was a lie from Team Cherry that got out of hand, and they were just like, oh, what do we do? How do we bury this? It's never
There's no out. Way that it's going to live up to the hype that everyone has built around this game. People have put it on such a high pedestal. We're never going to see it. We're never going to see a Bloodborne remaster. We're never going to see Silksong.
My other big prediction for 2025, Ubisoft will be completely purchased by Tencent by the end of the year.
Yeah.
They are not going to be a public company anymore. They will be
bought. Yeah, sadly. But that's what you get when you keep releasing games that are mediocre.
They fumbled the bag for far too long. Yeah, now they got to pay the price.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2025 should still be very exciting. We've got the Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater Delta. I thought it was supposed to come out this month, but now it's just undefined 2025 release date. We're going to have Death Stranding 2 on the beach. We're going to have the Switch 2, which I don't know if you saw, but according to recent reports, it's going to be called the Switch 2.
Good.
Which is interesting. I agree with what Tim Getty said. He says it should just be called that because anything else could risk the confusion that the Wii U caused, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point.
Yeah. We got Doom the Dark Ages.
Oh, yeah.
Metroid Prime 4.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No GTA 6, though, as Josh just confirmed.
Nope. It's not going to happen.
Okay. Josh, do you have any closing thoughts on 2024? Any final summaries on the year?
It was a good year for gaming. I had a lot of fun with the games that I've played. There's a lot of games that didn't make my list, but have been games that I've just sank a lot of hours into and stuff like that. But I mean, yeah, overall, it was a fun year for gaming.
Mm-hmm. Are you ready to reveal that Balatro was not really your number one? It was Concord.
$400 million.
Down the drain. I'm so mad at myself for not buying the controller.
Blunder of the century.
Blunder of the century, as Hollywood pointed out. Yes, indeed. I really, really should have bought that controller, Josh.
I know.
Idiot.
I know.
The Helldivers 2 controller. I also missed out on that one. I was a handsome boy.
It is. It was a good one.
Yes.
But no, overall, though, 2024 was a pretty good year for gaming. Anything else you want to add?
Just that it was a delight being here with you.
Yeah.
I really love this, either in real life or on the chat. And I'm glad that we got some beautiful people showing up. Thank you, Metroid Mike. Thank you, Jake and Cowboy and Fish Knight and 21st Century Fool and Pat Nat and anyone else who may have just been a looky lurker. Thank you for sharing this very special moment. Very good night, in my opinion.
Yes. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.
Happy New Year, everybody.